now. This is the Freedom Fiends. We've hijacked the CIA's orbital mind control laser beam to pirate signal of protest directly into your frontal cortex and tell you that you are free. Yes, indeed. This is Nima V. I'm here with the bad Quaker Ben Stone and Chandler. Chandler, what's your hamster name?
Wrestling name?
The Jabbering Coon Cat. But after my experiences last weekend at court, I thought about changing my name to the long-haired libertarian something a cop called me something like that. It was kind of
really
funny.
Like in court, he called you that libertarian wacko who didn't cut his hair.
No, it was outside of court. I actually had a really good conversation with the cop. That's a discussion for another show, though.
Why? We got plenty of time on this show. We don't have to do it now, though. And Mr. Ben Stone, you also have. I guess we all have long hair on today's show, don't we?
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Nima, is your hair terminal, or will it?
What does that even mean?
It gets.
is that a thing?
Yeah, it gets to the point of where it won't go any longer than it currently is.
Oh,
yeah, I'm totally there.
Yeah,
I may be there. I don't know. It feels like it hasn't grown in a while. That's really a thing. My hair stops growing.
Well,
it doesn't just grow and grow and grow.
It'll grow out instead of down.
Each follicle has a genetic sort of a program, and it produces hair for a specific set of time, and then it lets go of that hair and produces a new hair. So that might be, you know, for a person who is balding or has balding issues, that might be a 24-hour cycle, or a person with really long hair, that might be like a 2-year cycle. It's all according to what your genetics say.
I did not. So it's like that scene in Joe Dirt when he's on the radio and the host asked him about his facial hair. Like, why does he trim it that way? And he says, I don't trim my facial hair at all. And the host says, oh, you're just that inbred white hillbilly that your hair comes out with chops and a goatee. And you're like, yep. Okay. So, yeah, my genes decide how long my hair is when it decides that it's not going to grow any longer.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's terminal. So I've been terminal facial and cranial since like 2002 or something like that.
So if you don't do anything, your hair just stays exactly the same, like it is now. Like you wake up a few months from now, it'll look exactly the same.
Yeah.
Well, you cats are lucky. At least you can grow beards. I've got too much Indian blood in me. I can't grow any beard. Get that little goatee and that's about it.
Yeah, yeah. I've got some Native American blood in me to where I can't grow. I don't really grow body hair. So I have the Persian blood in my face. I can grow a nice long beard, but I barely have any chest hair.
I do have to admit I trim my mustache. And the reason that I do, I went like 2 years without trimming my mustache. But it's a lot of work to try to get food into my pie hole with all that hair in the way. Because my mustache probably would grow out to be about 6 inches long or so. And it's just really hard to get food through there, you know. It's like a giant.
Not only
filter.
That, it's not good for microphones either.
Yeah, exactly.
Do that little brush up the windscreen thing. Yep.
So hey, if you guys don't mind, I would like to make a personal announcement on the show today, and see if any fiends are interested in a little personal issue.
Be our guest.
The Bad Quaker Facebook page. I abandoned Facebook like, I don't know, too early 2012, I think. I'm not sure exactly, but I abandoned Facebook a long time ago. And in doing so, I abandoned the Bad Quaker Facebook page. And there were admins that kept it going on and off over time, but now it's pretty much sitting there stagnant. So if there's a fiend who would like to take over the Bad Quaker Facebook page and use it to promote Freedom Fiends, and I'm not really even sure how much you would want to do that. It would be sort of a self-managing, no-pay type of a thing. Anybody who wants to drop me an email, badquaker@badquaker.com, and we'll work that out with some of the existing admins to try to get you admin capabilities on the Bad Quaker Facebook page. And my purpose in this is not to promote Bad Quaker. it is to promote the Freedom Fiends using, because there's like, I can't remember now, something like 3,000 followers on Bad Quaker Facebook. So if we can, you know, move those towards Freedom Fiends, a lot of them don't even know that I'm not on Facebook anymore, you know. So anybody who's interested, drop me a message and let me know, and I'll try to get you, I'll try to connect you with admins that can get you in there. Again, for the purpose of promoting Freedom Fiends rather than Bad Quaker.
Good call. Good call. Let's get that fiend sourced. Yeah. Let's get her done.
I also wanted to throw out a couple of ideas that have been rolling around in my head. I've talked a few weeks ago about having sort of a Porkfest South, and I've kind of looked around. You know, the owner of Rogers Campground up in New Hampshire did a show with Ernie Hancock on Freedom's Phoenix. And Ernie was kind of jabbing at him a little bit, trying to get a price out of him. You know, when are you going to retire? Would you sell the campground and stuff? And I, if I recall, he said he would consider an offer of like $3 million. And it got me thinking about all the campgrounds that I'm around in the South. And I actually did a little research, and I think $3 million is a really good price for Rogers Campground in New Hampshire. But I think a smaller investment... The problem with Rogers is it shuts down for most of the year because of the weather in northern New Hampshire. But there are year-round campgrounds throughout the South that might be a lot better investment, and a single event once a year would pretty much... I mean, right now, Porkfest pretty much pays for Rogers Campground. They have steadies that are in there, but they're never full. But the campgrounds in the South that I see are full year-round. And so what I was thinking was, if there was somebody who is interested in something like that, you know, I can give you some information, even show you some campgrounds that are for sale in the South that would be year-round, good, solid investments, and we could maybe get a Porkfest South going that would, you know, literally would pay for the whole campground every year. So that's a little thing there. And then thinking of that, I started thinking in the realms of investment, and I was watching all the hubbub about the Uber, you know, the Uber taxi knockoffs. Mm-hmm. And there's something I was talking about in my civil disobedience series of using trucking to transport people and stuff that our movement needs to move long distances. And my daughter and I were talking. She's down here in the South visiting. And we started just sort of brainstorming this idea of a Uber shipping, where you had an app for a phone, and you could just enter into it. Hey, I've got a box I need to get from Mobile, Alabama, to Washington D.C. or to wherever, Shreveport, Louisiana, or something. And if anybody's going that way already, and they can just throw that box into their trunk. You know, it would be considerably cheaper than having UPS or somebody take it. It would maybe be more secure. And a person might be able to offset the price of their gas by just dropping over, picking up a package, and then dropping it off in another place. And this could be a package. This could be, a person. It could be the potential is endless, and all it would take is an app and some advertising. And my daughter, Kai, works in Renaissance festivals, and she says that they pretty much have a network to do that already. There's a large portion of Renaissance workers who don't have vehicles, and they just network among themselves, and they have entire camps, you know, a tent or a small camp trailer and stuff, and they network among themselves and move that stuff from Renaissance festival to Renaissance festival without even owning a vehicle. And they do it through this kind of a process, except they don't have an app. So you already have a market for the app right there in the Renaissance people that all have modern phones. So you literally have a customer base that's waiting for an app like this. And then there are so many uses for it, especially in the radical libertarian movement, that could utilize something like this for things that I can't even say on the radio that would be really useful for a lot of different things.
Right. Yeah, I love ideas like this. I was listening to some guy tell me, I guess locally, I don't know if it's everywhere in all the major cities now. I think he said it was called Burrow, and it's like that, but it's more for local drop-offs. Like, instead of having a local mover service and paying them a bunch of money, say you just have to move a truck full of stuff somewhere. People with the truck, you know, just like an Uber, are part of the app, and they'll come grab it and take it to whatever locale you want. So kind of like a courier service slash moving service, but locally. So you're saying you could do it nationally, maybe even internationally, and just send what you need where you need it to be sent and not have to worry about it being imposed upon by all sorts of federal regs and stuff like that.
Well, I think there's precedent for what you're talking about, Ben. I was thinking back to my teenage years. I had a few friends that toured with the Dead, and they had a network very similar to that. You know, and they didn't have smartphones and computers and all that, but they still got it done. So I think nowadays, with the technology we have, it would be so easy to implement.
Well, I love how they call all this stuff the sharing economy, too. And progressives are anti-sharing economy, so it kind of shows everybody where they really stand morally and economically. But like you guys say, this is all stuff that people have always done just amongst themselves. They're just finding a way to monetize it and open up your goodwill to everybody in the world rather than just the people who know you and know your name.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think I've talked on past shows about how my Facebook and Twitter feeds are inundated with Bernie Sanders supporters, right?
Because
he's so progressive and so wonderful. Yeah, here's a guy who wants to, like, tax regulate and maybe even outlaw services like Uber. Doesn't seem very progressive to me, you know, to interfere in basic commerce. You know, it's an A-B transaction. What is this guy doing trying to involve himself in it?
Yeah, I don't find anything new about it. I mean, I guess progressivism itself isn't new, you know. It's a we got World War One and World War Two in large part because of Wilson's progressive bent. And people want to, I guess, go that route again. And I don't really know why. I guess you can just blame it on their bad conceptualization of history. They need to sit down and listen to the Bad Quaker a little more often.
Well, I got to thinking about it, and it really, for a while, it puzzled me as to why people are so embracing this ideology. But you got to figure, over the last 60-70 years, the American culture has been conditioned to accept the fact that stuff should be free. There are certain rights, right? Mm-hmm. They don't understand the difference between rights and privileges.
Right.
And everything should be free and given to us. So now that it's not, and so many people are falling on tough times, you know, a guy like Bernie Sanders comes along and promises free unicorns to everyone, and they're like, yeah, we need that.
We don't. We'll tell you why.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Uber worms.
Hey guys, I had one other thing I wanted to give an old shout out to that series I did on civil disobedience. There was a point in it, a couple points actually, I think, where I talked about the possibility of hackers creating identities. And I can't really go into a lot of specifics right now, on exactly what I was talking about on in that series, Going Beyond Civil Disobedience. I wanted to play this by Davi, though, in response to that.
For the CIA wiretaps, anything we advocate which is illegal, immoral, or fattening should be interpreted to be satire, meaning its opposite.
So, before I say what I'm about to say, just keep in mind what Davi just said. So anyway, at DEF CON, there was a hacker that did a presentation on how to use hacking techniques to fake someone's death or fake someone's birth. So literally, he did a presentation on the very things that I was talking about in the Beyond Civil Disobedience series. And so I wanted to bring that up to maybe some ears that haven't heard the Beyond Civil Disobedience series, or maybe ears that didn't hear the presentation at DEF CON that this hacker, and I'm not going to put links in today's show for any of that stuff. If you want to hear it, you know, put some effort into it, find it for yourself, and figure out what it was I was talking about, and figure out what the guy at DEF CON was talking about, because it's pure gold to an activist. Okay, anyway, back to the real topics here.
Well, you know, I find it interesting, like, the government, CIA and FBI and all those crazy cats can do that with impunity. You know, they walk around, their agents walk around with, you know, fake identities and all kinds of different currencies and everything, and it's totally acceptable. But if the average person were to do it to, you know, further their own financial interests or social interests, you know, they could go to jail.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess that's what the modern rule of law is. The ones, I mean, I guess that's how it's always been. You know, who watches the watchers? The answer is nobody. They get to do whatever they want, because who's going to enforce it? It's kind of American exceptionalism, but on the domestic level. I mean, you see this internationally, because nobody can really challenge America, so they're the ones that enforce international law, so they get to do whatever they want. Same thing with the cops, the goons, the FBI. They can go and hack a server. They can go do whatever the things that they call people cyber criminals for, mass surveillance, etc. And nobody even questions it. It's not that that they don't get caught and arraigned. It's that nobody even cares.
You know, I was talking to Tim Fry not long ago, and he reminded me of something I hadn't thought about in a while. That is that, you know, Martha Stewart, there was this big hubbub about Martha Stewart getting arrested and everything. And most people think that Martha Stewart was convicted of insider trading. But the facts of the case is that she was not convicted of insider trading. She was convicted of lying to an investigator. She was caught up. She was actually baited. If you look at the transcript, she was baited into a situation where she would lie to one of the police investigators, and then they had her, and that's what she was convicted of. She was never convicted of insider trading. She went to jail for lying to an investigator.
Right, an investigator that probably lied to her in order to get her to lie.
He did, yeah. That's actually, I left that out. That was part of the, it's right there in the transcript. He actually openly, there was two of them, and they lied to her to bait her into lying back to them, and then they had her. And they do that all the time. That's how they work. It's the good cop, bad cop routine.
Yeah, exactly. That is the definition of the state. To me right now, that's kind of my conceptualization of it. Is really, and you've kind of said this before, I'm just kind of riffing off of it, but it's the legitimization of all these things we call wrong. So when people say, well, you get rid of a state, you'll end up with another state. Well, what I mean by getting rid of the state is I mean getting rid of thinking it's okay for institutions to do things like lie, cheat, steal, murder. Because right now we think it's okay when a Fed does that kind of stuff.
Who's this we you're talking about? Does
humanity.
Ah.
Humanity by majorities, I guess. We'll democratize it. Most people, not us, obviously, because we're fiends. We've mutated. We're homo freedomus or something, as opposed to homo parasitus. But people, the other ones, they still think it's okay, or they have this unease about it, and they need to be nudged to say, it's okay to think that that's not okay. It's okay to understand that your overlords are evil, not your friends, not your buddy, not your guy. We'll be back with more freedom after this quick trip to the market.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
So, voting. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Huh. Voting. Huh.
Somebody's got to remake that song with those lyrics.
Aggression.
I'm looking at you, Nima.
Voting.
Oh, me. Okay.
Voting is an act of faith.
I'll put it on my list.
If you don't believe, like if you're sitting
Boy,
at
you're
home.
Boy, you're kind, Ben.
I am. If you're sitting at home.
I would say it's an act of stupidity.
Well, it could be that. Well, you know, in ways it is. I've heard this said about the lottery. The people who object to the lottery will say something like, lottery is for people who don't know math. Or a lottery
no, it's a tax for people who don't know math.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. It's a tax for people who don't understand statistics. Well, voting is sort of a pacifier for people who don't understand math. So on a practical end, voting is silly. But on a moral end, voting, let's say if you're sitting at home watching TV and you're staring at Fox News or you're staring at CNN or you're staring at, you know, Maury Povich or whatever that thing is on the flashy box that tells you how to think. You're sitting there staring at it and it dawns on you, oh, it's voting day. And then you get up and you go to the effort to drive to wherever the polling place is and you show your ID or you don't or whatever. And you get up there and you have, you know, politician A and politician B and issue A and issue B, and you actually vote. What you're doing is you are proving that you have faith in the democratic process, in the Democratic Republic of the United States of America. What you are doing is you are expressing your faith. So, for instance, this morning I had a banana oat smoothie. Now, what I mean by that is I soak raw oats the night before in water, and in the morning I wake up, put a half a banana in with them, mix them in the blender, and I have a banana oat smoothie. Now, the reason I go through that effort is threefold. A, I like the taste of a banana oat smoothie. B, I believe that a banana oat smoothie will satisfy my hunger. And C, a banana oat smoothie, I believe, has some health benefits for me. So because I have faith that it will taste good, I have faith that it will fill me up and satisfy me, and I have faith that it is good for me, therefore I act. I act upon my faith. Voting is acting upon your faith. If you didn't believe that government actions would be a result of your voting, you wouldn't vote. If you didn't believe that your will or your actions would have an influence on government, you wouldn't vote. So voting is an act of faith in government. Now, this is just basic taking the things apart and seeing why it is that a person acts. This is praxeology. Why did the person take action? The person took action because they believed that the action would benefit them. You don't take action if you don't believe that your action is going to do something. So the fact that you vote means that you have faith in government and you believe that the vote works. You believe they actually count it. You believe that they pay attention to the vote. You believe that they respond to the vote. And you believe that you can change government to do whatever it is that you want. So in this sense, it's exactly like prayer. A person who does not believe in any kind of deity, a complete atheist, does not pray because they don't believe that prayer will do any good. But a person who has faith in a deity may choose to pray if they believe that that deity will listen to them, will respond to their prayer, and will do what it is that they want the deity to do. And generally speaking, that is give them something. Give me wealth, give me health, give me a happy day, give me this, give me that. That is typically the reason that a person prays. So a prayer is an act of faith in a deity to give you what you want or act in a way that you want the deity to act. And that is exactly why we vote. Why not me, but that is why people vote, because they have faith in this thing that exists in our imagination, the state. They believe in the state. They believe that voting will affect the state. They believe that their votes actually reach the ears of the state, and they believe that the state will act on their behalf. And so a voting to vote is the same as an act of prayer to a deity. When you vote, you are praying to the God, the state. And every Christian should immediately, if you are a Christian and you believe in God and you believe what the Bible tells you, then you should recognize that this is paganism, and you should immediately confess your sins to God, ask for forgiveness, and repent by never, ever again voting. If you're a Christian, if you're consistent, that's what you will do. Because if you're a consistent Christian, you will recognize that voting is prayer. You will feel bad about it, and you will endeavor to never do that horrible, evil deed again. You will never try to use the aggression of government to force your will upon other people. That's all that it is. That's what it boils down to.
Preach it, Pastor Quaker. Love it. Love it. So I agree with that pretty much wholeheartedly. Some people in the Liberty Movement don't, apparently. Walter Block and Scott Horton were on the Tom Woods Show debating Rand Paul, yes or no, I think, was the topic. Scott, obviously, on the no team, firmly in pocket. Walter, still a fan of Rand, and Woods was supposed to be impartial moderator, but I think we all kind of got the sense of which side he fell on. Now, I think Walter's argument is broken down in a couple of different points, mostly his point saying that, well, Rand is the most libertarian candidate, so it's our job. He basically made it seem to be like we have to support Rand because he's the most libertarian. If he did bring the caveat later, if you're into politics. So we could assume he means if you're not into politics, then fine, whatever, which I think we all fall onto that side. But if you're Walter Block and you write books about how the state is pretty much unnecessary and we don't need it at all, then why are you still interested in politics, I guess, is my question. And then I really liked Scott's point that it's not like when you pick Rand, you're Murray Rothbard picking George Bush or something, HW, because he's the least bad candidate. It's more like you're saying Rand is like Ron, and Ron is somebody we ANCAPs like, and so we like Rand, and Rand's program is similar to our program, which kind of taints the name. If this is this spiritual teaching motel.
Well, you know what really turned me off about the whole debate? I listened to the whole thing. I tried to be attentive, but the point, when I boiled Walter Block's point down, it just seemed to be like voting for the lesser of two evils, right? And he made this assertion that if we vote for the lesser of two evils, that will somehow promote liberty. And it astonished me. I don't understand it, right? I mean, at least Scott Horton said that there's more than one way to affect change. If you're a person that doesn't believe in voting or only believes in doing it on the local level, you can always engage in activism, like suing the government all day long, I think was his words.
Yeah.
You know, so he had pointed out some effective strategies, but I just don't see how anyone can think that voting for the lesser of two evils, like evil is evil, and if you're a moral person, how can you expect evil to advance your cause?
Right.
That's true. I think, though, and to me, the keystone of Block's argument is, well, in 2008, Block says, or I guess it was 2008, he says he voted for Obama, not McCain. So he votes, apparently, and he voted for Obama, not McCain, because he says McCain was just likely to be far worse on foreign policy. McCain might get us nuked, which Scott says on his show regularly. Like, if McCain won, we might all be eviscerated in nuclear hellfire at this point. Because of how belligerent he is with Russia, when Russia has obviously thousands of H-bombs, just like we do, et cetera, et cetera. So is there some room for that? I mean, even Lysander Spooner said that it's not necessarily immoral to vote in your own self-defense. If you're just casting a vote, you don't believe in the system, but you think that voting one way might keep you from a worse fate. If you're conscious of why you're doing it, is that then okay? I guess I would ask you gentlemen.
I would look at it a little bit differently. The self-defense argument is very often thrown up, and I look at it a little bit differently. If it's a matter of me against the state, and if I can vote against the state and cause the state to not attack me, then you have a moral okay. grounds for it. But a vote
it's
is
like a referendum on a bond issue or something. Like, I want my property taxes to go up? You can go vote no. Of course, I don't want my property taxes to go up. And you think that would be an acceptable vote?
If under certain circumstances, you can make that argument. But the problem with that is that government never openly acts in an honest way. So when you think you're right. voting against, you know, this bond issue or whatever, very often there are layers of things put in there that are not even listed on the ballot that you never get to see, that you're anti-vote actually does in a positive direction some other way, or your positive vote does in an anti-direction some other way, because they intentionally stack the deck so that no matter which way the vote goes, they always increase government some way. So the real question is not, am I voting against state aggression? The real question is, when I vote, I'm voting for the state to do something against other people. I'm using the state to accomplish my goal. And if you talk to, like, probably 90-some percent of all politicians on every level, from the city council all the way up to, like, the UN or whatever, the vast majority of these politicians believe that they're doing good. And they believe that if they could just have their will, if they could be emperor of the world, or if they could just get their policies enacted, things would be better. And so when a person votes and they think they're voting to limit government, or they think they're voting to stop some oppressive thing that the government's doing, very often there are layers that you don't see, the unseen. And in addition to that, you're doing exactly what every politician throughout history has done, or almost every politician, which is to try to use government to do what you perceive is good at the cost of others. It's always at the cost of somebody. Government can't act in a neutral. It always acts at the cost of someone else. So,
yeah. So basically, the government is the Loch Ness monster asking for $3.50, and your chef's mom giving it a dollar when you vote.
Yeah. Because they're never honest with the question. They're never honest with the question.
They're never honest. Yeah. And I also like your point that you've made on the Bad Quaker podcasts about how they're going to get it anyway. Even if you vote no, they're going to find some other way. I've got some real world examples in my mind that I'll share when we get back from this trip to the market.
Listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CatMuff, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CatMuff, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Beanie goodness, baby.
So, I had a question for you gentlemen.
Shoot.
And we're talking about voting in self-defense, right? So, if my local city wants to build this grand palace, or I think it's called a courthouse now, and they put a bond issue out, and people say, you know what, we don't want to do that. Like, a bond issue is asking the state to borrow money, correct?
Right.
Right, so the people say they don't want to do it because the state's poor already, yet the courthouse still gets built. I mean, so you say you're voting in self-defense, but it's kind of pointless because they do it anyway, right?
Yeah, they'll figure out a way to fund it. They'll either do one of two things. They'll either figure out a side way to fund it in a different manner, but it's still coming out of taxes. It's still being stolen from somebody. Or they'll just keep hitting the bond and renaming it and changing the wording in it and just keep coming back over and over and over every 6 months or every year until they get what they want. They never back down. They pretend they'll back down, but in truth, they'll never really back down. And then, Nima, I think you were going to address the...
Right. So in the latter case, when they keep pushing it forward, maybe tweak it here and there, they'll often employ the local media in their behest as co-conspirators on such an action. I was party to that myself when I was a local reporter in Washington State. One of the school districts in our viewing area, really, apparently, they said they needed this new high school. And so a lot of stories, they would always come, and the prison too. The prison said it needed a new wing. And so they would always come to us and say, why don't you come out here and do a story on how overcrowded our prison is and the conditions and how we need new stuff and criminals are getting out early because we don't have enough room for them and how it makes your streets less safe. You know, I'd get pitches like this, and so I'd bring it to my news director, and she'd say, yeah, that's kind of a perennial thing. We do that story whenever they come and ask us to. It's like, yeah, go do it. You know, and I'm like, well, okay, I need my story for today. I want to get home in time to see my wife. So yeah, I go do the story because it's easy. It's canned. And so it's kind of an incentive thing. It's not necessarily that the media is evil. It's just that reporters want to get home to their wives. It's a quick, easy story. Maybe they had a long day the day before. So they go do this easy story that the local government goons can for them. Same thing with the school. The school had some break-ins, and I don't know how they happened, but apparently they left some doors unlocked. Wink, wink, nod, nod. And some local toughs went in and smashed everything up, spray paint, graffitied everything, just made it look really bad. And the big controversy just a few weeks before was that they had a bond issue for a new high school and it failed. And so the superintendent obviously gets up and basically tries to remake the case and, well, look, now your high school is even more trashed. You guys should have told you so. You should have had this bond. We could have had a new school in a couple of years. And all sorts of silly nonsense like this. And they know that the local press will always take the angle of look how it affects you, and people fall for it eventually.
What happens if a principled reporter like yourself doesn't want to follow that storyline?
You try to find another angle. So I was trying to find the angle of, well, what was your role in this? You're in charge of the school. How did you let this happen? And I basically pressed him on it, and we had some reporter questions. And it was actually really good for ratings, etc. The news director really liked it, how I put him on the spot like that. And he responded in a way that was kind of angry-ish on camera. And so it was great for a little bit, but then he'd never return my calls. And word got around, and eventually the prosecutor, who I hated anyway because I tried to press him too, wouldn't take my calls. And so then they start doing things like they'll have a press conference, like a really important press conference. They'll send advance word to your competitor stations, but not you. So it literally happened to me once. It was like the most important press conference that year or something. It was about an officer-involved shooting. And the station said, well, when are you guys going to this thing? You're not here yet. And that's how we found out. The actual local government, the prosecutor, never let us know. He wanted to keep us out.
So you're getting blacklisted.
So you get these kind kind of basically and not really blacklisted in a sense. They don't give you the kind of treatment that they give to your competitors, which means your competitors are likely to get a story that you don't get. And so there's these disincentives they try to build in to pet their pretty sweet kittens that are their lap cats, and to kick us people that may question them or make them feel uncomfortable out in the alleyway.
I think that's a level of dirtiness that most people don't realize. Legal, it's all legal, but it's still, right. It stinks.
It does stink. Yeah, and you know, they'll all tell you that. Even when I was in Wyoming, a guy I really loved, he was the public information officer, because often a cop shop will have a guy who's literally the only guy that lets to talk to the press. He's taken the trainings on how not to do too much. And, you know, in our first meeting, it's pretty standard. I imagine he said this to all the guys who had my post. He says, you know, I'm going to watch what you do. And if you show us in a certain way, next time you call me, it's going to be name, rank, and badge number. You know, I'll give you what I'm required to give you, but nothing more. More Freedom Fiends, though, when we get back from this quick trip to the market. Please make sure you support all of our sponsors.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelts from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
BIPCOT No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Hour 2 of the Freedom Fiends Weekend Edition, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Ion Cannon, mounted high atop the Wormabago Mobile Studio in the depths of Smuggler's Bayou, where the swamp's alive with 1,000 eyes, and none of them belong to the NSA. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments, and you can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And my name is Ben Stone. With me is Nima Vedotti and Chandler St. Pierre. And we are talking via Fiend Phone, which is an amazing technology. We're bouncing it around through satellites and across the internet. We're bouncing this message from Texas up to the Midwest, down to Alabama, way up into Maine. And still, you hear the crystal clear, perfect, beautiful sound of the Freedom Fiends right there in your ear hole. Hey, guys, how's it going?
It's going.
Yeah, doing well.
So we were talking in the first hour, mostly I was ranting, and then you guys were talking about voting and specifically about this debate between Walter Block, who is a very well-respected economist and a professor at Loyola University in New Orleans, or maybe not New Orleans. Anyway, it's in Louisiana. And he is a well-respected man. I have great appreciation for Walter Block. I have learned a tremendous amount of things from Walter Block. He is rock solid on lots of stuff. And he was debating Scott Horton, our friend from antiwar.com. And Scott Horton, I have the greatest level of respect for Scott. Scott has a mind that is incredibly sharp. He's just, he's an amazing asset to us and to anybody who's seeking the truth. And I really like to listen to Scott Horton. He's really a sharp guy. And this was a debate held on Tom Woods' podcast. And again, Tom Woods, he's a great guy. You know, we have the greatest respect for Tom around here. And the debate was, should libertarians support Rand Paul in the upcoming election or not? And Scott Horton took the position, no, that Rand Paul is not worthy of the support, basically, of a blind, toothless donkey. But Walter Block took the position that, and he actually said, and this is what really struck me weird about Block's argument. Block actually said at one point, actually said this at three different times in the debate. He said that libertarians have a moral obligation to vote for the most libertarian candidate. And at one point, Tom Woods kind of called him on that and made him backtrack a little. And so he did back. This is actually at the 30-minute mark that he made that statement. And I'll quote it for you. He said, quote, "We libertarians are obliged as a matter of principle to pick the candidate who is the most libertarian." And again, then Tom Woods kind of called him on that, and he backpedaled at the 3108 mark. And he said, well, we're not really under an obligation. And then he started talking about Rothbard, and he started falling back on an appeal to authority. And then just a few minutes later, literally just a few minutes later, he went right back and restated the same thing again with slightly different words. And this struck me, you know, this is what a con man does. And I'm not saying Walter Block is a con man, but I'm saying it's a method that con men do, or the method that a salesperson will do when they're selling you something that they're not being entirely upfront about. They will make a statement that is not based on facts. And if you call them on it, assuming it's one of the foundational aspects of their sales pitch, if you call them on it, they'll back down. And then a few minutes later, they'll bring that same point right back and try to give it to you again. Because in order for you to believe their con or their sales pitch, you're required to accept this aspect of their pitch. And this is a typical thing that a salesperson or a con man will do when they're trying to sell you something that they know is flawed. They will make an assertion that is false, and if you call them on it, they'll back up, and then a couple minutes later, they'll distract your attention and bring that false assertion back into the conversation again.
Yeah, they'll reframe the pitch if it's still necessary to their end goal, which is what I kind of really want to eke out here, is what is Walter's goal in all this? Because he did kind of walk it back, like you said, and I think if we give him the benefit of the doubt, what he's really saying is, if you are going to participate in the political system via voting, like if you're going to support a candidate, you're obligated to support the most libertarian candidate. The most libertarian candidate is Ron Paul. There you have it. But he seems to presume that anybody listening to the show, he seems to act like it would be the common thing that people of a libertarian bent would think, or the premise that I think he's taking for granted, that's actually not there. Or he's really trying to help Rand get more support, and that's his end goal. What do y'all think?
Well, one of the things that stood out to me was the word libertarian was thrown around a lot. And I don't know, I guess I have a different version of libertarian. I think in the sense of that debate, they were talking more about like capital L libertarians, the Libertarian Party, the voting populace. I often consider myself a libertarian, but I can't imagine voting, let alone supporting somebody like Rand Paul. And I don't know, I guess maybe if I was Walter Block, I would have framed the argument a little bit differently, because I think you have a possibility of turning people off, right?
Yeah.
because you're pointing out that and Scott Horton brought this up, like, by supporting and encouraging people to vote for Rand Paul, you're sort of associating the libertarian brand with him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Rand, from what I've seen, Rand Paul is anything but libertarian. I have a lot of respect for his dad, but he's not his dad.
You know, and there's another
thing. He's not his dad. And strategically, because Walter kept bringing it back to that, is well, what are you talking about? You trying to be strategic here? And I think the answer is yeah, if we're going to be strategic, we need to realize that people look at us now as it is, and they think, well, Ron Paul's a racist and he hates women. And so all you libertarians and anarchists are racist and hate women because Ron Paul's not great on abortion and he's not great on immigration. That's all they think about. They don't even know that Ron would always bring up end the empire first and then fund welfare until all those people who need it don't need it anymore, and then you get rid of the entitlement thing. They don't know that order. They don't know that he's written two books literally on foreign policy about how end the wars, end the empire. And that's with Ron, who we all agree is an amazing and is almost plumb line anarchist. Almost. Rand's not even close. And so what are the consequences of them associating us with Rand? And then they think if you're libertarian, you're pro-war. We can't have that.
Yeah, war is antithetical to libertarian ideals. And you know, one of the other things, I don't know if you guys caught it, but Walter Block threw it out at the very end of the debate. He said something to the effect of, well, even if Rand Paul is just like courting the conservative and the neocon votes, but as soon as he gets
pandering,
in there,
pandering, I think is the
word. Yeah, pandering, yeah. He's gonna be one of us. I mean, I've heard that thrown around a lot, and that's so unrealistic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look at what happened with Obama. I mean, people on the left thought, well, he's kind of wishy-washy on some of these things we believe in. But they thought he'd be, I don't know what they wanted to be, Bernie Sanders, I guess. But they're not entirely happy with his performance at all. They think he's been weak on Wall Street and economic regulations and minimum wage and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and even if you hold that belief, like he's a secret libertarian, and once he gets in there, he's going to be honest. I think Larkin Rose wrote a book about that called The Iron Web.
Yeah.
And it's so unrealistic, right? Because in that system, if you are allowed to enter it, like even allowed, like let's face it, even if we thought voting worked and we ran and we had 20,000 signatures to get on, I don't know, the libertarian platform or, you know, party line or whatever, we would never be allowed in that system. But even if you are allowed in that system, do you think you're going to be allowed to make that radical change that perpetuates that system? Of course not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're
no,
not
they
gonna
don't
sit
let
back.
You ascend that high. If right. They don't trust you, heart and soul, to do what the people actually want, rather than the fact that Rand Paul has gotten as far as he has, attests to the fact that somebody, enough of the establishment, believes that in the end he's going to support the establishment over the people.
Yeah, all you have to do is look at Ron Paul's actual history in government, and he was not really able to get anything solid passed. One of the first things that he attacked was to try to get Fort Knox audited, because at that time frame, that was one of the big questions, is there actually any gold in Fort Knox? And so Ron Paul was one of the people in the early Reagan administration that really tried to get Fort Knox audited. And he made so much of a stink that they were like, okay, yeah, fine, okay, so let's go audit Fort Knox. And then they had a photo op in Fort Knox, and they didn't count squat. There was no audit. And yet they said after it was all done, well, see, we audited it. Ron Paul was right there. It was all part of it. It was all up and up, and everything was fine. And they didn't count anything. But that's not the point. You know, government plays the game. They give you the image. They all posture and pose, and they all look like they're doing something. And then you feel like something's been accomplished, and everybody feels better, and they go back with business as usual. And so, you know, it really doesn't matter if you've picked the most libertarian of the group.
Right, right.
It should be blatantly obvious by now, like all the left-leaning individuals that threw their heart and souls to Obama because he was going to end the wars and close Guantanamo and roll back the police state.
Yeah.
I mean, look what's happened over the last 8 years. And, you know, we're not surprised, but a lot of these people are, and they still make excuses. So do you think, I just don't understand how people don't get it yet, like that voting doesn't change. You know, exchanging one ruler for another changes nothing. The system still thrives and continues.
Well, you know, it brings up an interesting thought in my head. Barack Obama's actually done a couple things, maybe three things lately that I've been supportive of, and I kind of find myself not feeling as bad about him as I did about G-Dub. You know, I think he was way less bad than George W. And I'm thinking of course, the Iran deal, which is great. I mean, it's groundbreaking. It's like Nixon goes to China kind of thing, as well as Cuba, you know, smoothing over relationships with them. It's been ridiculous that we have had an embargo this long that doesn't work to topple the regime, and all it does is hurt the market and people who want to trade with Cubans and visit Cuba. And also talking about criminal justice reform. And obviously none of this stuff is up to our par, but it's kind of unexpected for me. And I'll bring where I think that's leading to shortly after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Okay, welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. As I was saying before that short jump to the market, so Barack Obama, he's not been completely horrible lately. I mean, I guess he probably still signs a kill list and does horrible, murderous things. But as far as horrible mass murderers go, he's done a few things that are decent. Three examples today are Iran deal, Cuba, and what's the other one? Oh, talking about criminal justice reform. I mean, talk is not action, obviously. But people call that legacy stacking, and I kind of see what they're getting at. But I wonder also if now that we all are talking about, hey, well, look at Barack Obama, the left here, they thought he would do all these amazing things, and they kind of disappoint. He kind of disappointed everybody for 7 years, 6 years, and now he's starting to do some actual decent things. Maybe it's not necessarily his own personal legacy stacking. Maybe it's legitimacy stacking. Maybe they're trying to let us know that, hey, maybe eventually, no matter who you vote for, they might do some decent things at the end there. You might have to wait till the end of their lame duck term, but stuff might happen. So maybe here in the final stretch, the establishment's like, hey, we'll throw them a few cookies, a few bones, just so they kind of forget about it.
That's what I was going to go towards. I mean, I didn't mean to sound like a pessimist, but I kind of feel like, especially with the criminal justice reform and pardoning, 30 people. Speaking as a friend who has a friend who served 10 years in prison for a nonviolent crime and had his life ruined, yeah, I really get the sense that they are, the more we talk about this and bring this to the forefront, they have to throw us that bone to at least keep us interested and you know, have it so we're not rioting in the streets more so than is already happening now.
You know, I think that's kind of what marijuana legalization, what the process there is, that, you know, they're not going to end the war on drugs. They're just going to shift it
Although
slightly.
We should switch to a cat metaphor with catnip instead of the throwing a bone to the dog if we're going to do marijuana.
Yeah.
But I really think that's what that is. It's just a pacifier. It's, they'll back. This is the thing with governments. They will always back off until all the people drop their pitchforks and put down their torches, you know. And then once everybody is back in control, then they just bring right back in some other form. And it may not be the same. Like, it may not be the excuse they use in the future to fill the prisons may not be marijuana. It may be, you know, oh, they're dirty Muslims or they're immigrants or they're this or they're that. But there's always something taking that place to keep the prisons full and to keep the taxes paid.
Well, and I think a lot of people, whether they agree with the war on drugs and all that, they don't understand that the prison system in this country is it's big business, right? I mean, prisons will be built in towns under the contract that the local police forces keep them at a certain occupancy level. And if they don't, then the local towns have to pay the prisons. So there's that economic incentive to keep imprisoning nonviolent criminals. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, legalizing marijuana and all that, but we're not striking at the root. I mean, the root is to get rid of these for-profit prisons that help drop the, you know.
Well, that might be the trunk. I think the root's even deeper than that. I mean, the root's obviously the state itself.
Yeah.
Get rid of the prisons as one of the beneficiaries of the war on drugs. There's also the courts themselves, the judges, the cops who get overtime to work on a SWAT team. You know, a lot of times we'll say something like, this costs the taxpayer so many billions of dollars. But you just got to look at it from the point of view of the state. That's not a cost to them. That's a profit to them.
Right.
Yeah, because they're stealing the money anyway.
Yeah. If they could bilk, if something costs the quote unquote government $30 billion, that's not really what it is. That's the government getting $30 billion from your wallet. Yay. Let's all applaud and have a vacation in Puerto Rico, etc.
Yeah. Well, I had an interesting experience couple weeks ago in court. I had a traffic violation again. I don't know what it was for. I think it was no registration, right? And the cop didn't show up. So I went to the assistant DA and I was like, look, cop's not here. I want this thrown out. I got stuff to do. I work for a living. I can't be hanging around here all day. And the DA was like, no, you need to wait. We're calling the cop now. And the cop was in some like police training or whatever. So, you know, me, I'm just fuming. Like, and I did I think I might have said something to the extent of this is BS, but I said it in long form, very loud in the lobby for everyone to hear. And, well, I'll continue the story when we get back from the market, just to illustrate how the state doesn't care. They're going to extort you no matter what, because it is a profit for them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So worms.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
For some reason, in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FiendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
So before we left for the market, I was talking about one of my recent experiences in traffic court. And, you know, the cop didn't show up, and I wanted to have it dismissed, which is standard court procedure, mind you. You know, if the cop doesn't show up on the date, it gets dismissed and you leave. And I find it interesting, like, I was actually there early. One of the few times in my life I was somewhere early instead of late. And if the roles were reversed and I didn't show up and the cop did, what would happen? They would fudge, wouldn't send any letters. They wouldn't do anything. They would just, you know, impose the fine and suspend the license or
and
whatever.
And impose an extra fine, so, failure to appear, and you'd be out another $500 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So they'd really get you. So that's what they're hoping for. And they had plenty of those that day, too. So I found it interesting, though. They threw a couple of them out because a trooper couldn't appear. So I'm like, all right, let's get this show on the road. Give me my paperwork so I can go sign off on it and whatever. You know, and it wasn't a big fine. It was only $70. But nope, they wouldn't do it. And they went, there was one city cop there, and he went and got the other cop out of the training and brought him to the courthouse. He was in a suit and, you know, whatever. And he was, like, so unimpressed. And I said to him, he gets there, he's like, all right, what do you want to do? And I said, well, geez, I don't know, you know, because he pulled me over in my driveway. And I was kind of gauging him to see how he'd react. And I said, all I know is I was just sitting in my driveway, and you pulled in and wrote me a ticket. And he's like, all right. He says, that's how you want to play it? You sure? He says, we can go ask for a double fine if you're going to impugn my integrity. And I was like, well, no, I'm not doing that, you know. And he's like, well, what do you want to do? He says, I got to be honest with you. I don't want to be here, so let's get this straightened out. So I started talking to him, and he's like, all right, hold on. And he pulls me aside to the far end of the lobby where nobody is, right? And we stand behind this big stone pillar. This is the new $33 million waste of money. His own words, the new courthouse.
Wow.
And I got to say, I kind of like this cop, right? So we're talking, and he's like, look, man, I'm going to level with you. I would just assume throw this out. He says, and we can even try for that. He goes, I don't care. He says, you got your car registered, right? I said, yeah, my boss kind of lectured me, and I had to. He's like, that's all I cared about. He says, I can try to throw this out. He says, but I'll be honest with you, it's probably not going to happen because the DA doesn't like you very much right now. They had some choice words for me. They said I was being aggressive and belligerent, and I guess the assistant DA was like afraid of me. He said it was overheard that he would get out of those crazy recalls. So I'm talking to the cop, and I was like, well, we can do that, or we try, and if it doesn't work, he's like, well, I can reduce it for you and just give you some time to pay it. He's like, you know what? I actually agree with you. I think this whole registration thing is BS. He goes, let's call it what it is. It's a tax, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, this cop almost gets it. You know, so we were talking and whatever. And he's like, you know, you might be surprised to know, but I probably have a lot in common with you. And he says, I'd love to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you sometime and talk it out. He says, you know, now's not the time. So long story short, you know, we went and got the fine reduced or whatever. I still had to pay it. It kind of stunk, but, you know. So I'm actually thinking about interviewing this cop because he's a former vet and he's a police officer. And he doesn't agree with a lot of these laws, you know, from a moral standpoint. If you disagree with some stupid nanny law or some stupid revenue generating law, how can you enforce it, right? It'd be an interesting experience to see how he squares that.
My guess, and I wonder how many people are like this, is he squares it by basically if you can't beat him, join him, right? If the guys with the brown shirts are the ones beating people and taking their money, put on a freaking brown shirt. I mean, well, you don't want to get beaten and have your money stolen. You'd rather be the one doing the stealing than the victim, right?
I think you're right, because one of the comments he made, and I can't remember exactly how he said it, but when we were talking, you know, I said something, you know, like, well, in another life, who knows? And he's like, yeah, we all get roped into careers we don't, you know, we never pictured ourselves doing. So I kind of wonder, right? Like, he got out of the military, and what were his options? You know, he probably wasn't getting taken care of very well, because that's what happens to vets when they come back. You know, what's my options? Gee, I guess I can join the police force. So
they always have an open door. Yeah, I mean, pretty much if you've been overseas fighting for Uncle Sam, they'll open their doors right up and give you a fat starting salary, sometimes even a signing bonus. I mean, it's hard to make your way in the private market. You got working, and you got this this golden opportunity sitting there staring you in the face. I mean, people respond to incentives. That's all it is.
And the guy was young, too. Like, he actually said, he's like, you know, today's my birthday, so I really don't want to be in this courthouse. And I was like, yeah, I get it. And he asked me how old he was. And the guy's only like 29, 28 or 29. So he's really young. So wow. I guess, I mean, there's still hope for people like that. I mean, when I posted it on Facebook and Twitter and all that, I was like, you know, I'd like to talk with this guy and pick his brain. And who knows, you know, plant some radical libertarian ideas in his brain. And maybe somewhere along the line, he'll consider a career change. But, you know, and I had friends comment like, well, if you can't get that far, at least talk to him about Oath Keepers. And, you know, I mean, whatever. They serve a purpose, and I don't know if he's earning, but still no hope.
I think there's a reason why law enforcement against prohibition is all retired cops. Because once you got that pension coming to you, and you don't have to worry about losing your house and your car, and your kids are all grown up, and you don't have to worry about mouths to feed, how you really feel. Yeah. But it's a lot harder when you're in your 20s and 30s still trying to make a way for yourself.
Yeah, especially when you're married and got kids like him.
Yeah, and you know the thing exactly. With cop salaries too, first off, it's a pretty good living. Second off, you know, in spite of what the advertising would have you believe, it's a fairly safe job compared to other jobs like, you know, fishing or logging.
Especially in Maine.
Yeah.
What other job do you have a license to fill somebody with bullets just because they look at you the wrong way? I mean, that's as safe as it gets, I think.
Yeah. And then in addition to all of that, you've got you work till you're about 45 or 50 or so. And a lot of places, not the same everywhere, but a lot of places, that's it. You can retire with really good retirement at about 50 years old. I mean, that's sweet if you can if you can get a gig like that.
Well, you know, when I go around town here in Central Texas, I'll see cop cars parked at mansions, like giant tracts of land with huge seven-room houses, and it's got a county sheriff vehicle in there. I'm like, are they just hanging out with their buddy, or is that there? And then I go a little closer, and there's another cop car in the garage. So it's either one cop lives there and is visiting the other, or some cop bought that, you know, or a sheriff, or maybe he's a muckety-muck detective. Who knows? But he's making bank. Or I'll go into nice neighborhoods to work to do my day job, and I'd never run into cops in the ghetto, and rarely in the working class neighborhoods. It's always in the nice suburban place where you have people with law degrees and doctorates living. You also have cops.
You know, here's a good example of that on TV. If you look back at the TV show Breaking Bad, you know, you've got Walter, who is a high school teacher, and you've got his wife, who before her pregnancy, she was an accountant. And they're both working, and they're working their butts off trying to make a living, and they're living in a very modest house in a modest neighborhood. And then you've got the criminal Hank, who was the DEA officer, and his wife, and they're living in an upscale neighborhood at the end of a cul-de-sac with a sculpted, you know, landscaping, and the interior of their house is, I mean, their house is literally like three times the value of Walt's house. And that's actually a pretty accurate description of the discrepancies there.
The Hank Schraders are the traitors, but we got old bricks to build a fortress from the invaders.
Oh, cool. Nice. It's, is that from your latest
line
work?
From Yes, Set Ross Free. I debuted it last week at the Free Ross fundraiser here in Austin. Working on actually putting the track out pretty soon in recorded form. So keep your eyes peeled.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, going back to like the dangers of being a cop. I think we've talked about this before, but what's one of the biggest things they have to worry about? Other cops, right? You know, because if you go against the Brotherhood, there'll be reprisals. Right. It's like the mafia.
Right.
And I mean, I think I've told this story before. I talked a former local cop who no longer lives in the state, and yeah, they don't have quotas, but you don't write a certain amount of tickets and they just won't give you hours. You know, you won't get your 40 hours. They'd rather pay another cop overtime if he's given out plenty of tickets, then, you know, give you your hours if you're not writing them. So, yeah, I mean, that's what they have to fear the most. I mean, I get it that in the inner cities, there's some dangerous people that don't like cops. Okay, fine, I'll concede that point. But for the most part, I think their biggest enemy is their brothers if they cross them. So maybe they should consider a new line of work.
Yeah, exactly. And why do those people, those dangerous people in the inner city, not like cops? And why are they dangerous? I mean, you follow the root or the branches back enough to the root, it's all the state. It's all their public schooling, their upbringing in government-modified environments, GMEs, that cause them to be who they are. I mean, you are what you absorb in your childhood, and they have the state beating them and stealing from them and taking food out of their bellies in various ways from their conception, basically.
And they're just adapting to that interference and that regulation from the state. I mean, they're doing what they have to do to survive. I'm not condoning it. Like, I don't think mugging people, you know, theft and murder is a good thing. But like you said, I mean, if you trace it back, why are they doing that? And they're just adapting to their circumstances.
Hey, Nima?
And now humans have, what's up, Ben?
Repeat that phrase again. Government, what did you say, environment?
Government modified environments. Yeah, I actually bit that from somebody we don't name on The Fiends anymore. But I'll take it anyway, right? Good artists borrow, great artists steal. So yeah, I'm taking it.
Well, that goes back to what I've been talking about with zoos and zoo animals. You can't tell, you can't understand the nature of an animal by looking at a caged animal. You can't understand what the nature of a lion is by going to the zoo and observing lions. You will never understand what a lion is and how he lives his life by going to the zoo. And that's kind of what, you know, American society, or actually most countries' society, is. It is a modified version of a zoo where we're all kept animals. And it's worse when you get into places like the inner cities or Indian reservations or anywhere where the people are kept in an area, fed and housed by the government, clothed by the government, given a salary by the government. All those things are basically an invitation to get behavior from individuals that is not according to their nature, and that a way of behavior that they would never act if they were humans in the wild, so to speak. So, you know, yeah, it is. It's a contrived nature. Inner city behavior is a contrived nature, just like lions in a zoo are. It's a false nature. It's not real.
And now humans have moral agency, obviously something we don't really ascribe to animals. But there are some good parallels we can draw there. And we'll get to that in just a moment when we're back from this trip to the market.
Freedom Fiend.
Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Worms. Yeah, that's right. Worms.
Molten truth in your ear hole. We should probably touch back on the on the
lines from a Saul Williams song is why you rhyme about being hardcore. Rhyme about being hardcore. Be hardcore.
Ah, love that. I dig that. Definitely. And what I was going to say before our jump to the market is dogfighting, right? I mean, people for the most part look at it and they look at it in disgust. They have a sense of moral outrage about dogfighting operations. And those dogs are caged and beaten and taught to be violent. And people don't really blame the dogs necessarily. They don't look at the dog and think, what a horrible creature. I can't believe he's like that. Why is he doing those awful things? Because they know that he was raised and beaten and tortured to become what he is today. And they rightly direct their vitriol at the one responsible for that. Things like the people who grow up in inner cities and turn out violent, or people like al-Baghdadi, the guy who started ISIS, met a lot of his ISIS buddies in torture dungeons ran by the CIA. The CIA, in polite circles, doesn't really get any blame for that.
Right, but they created that environment where they almost guaranteed it would happen.
Yeah, they sure did. And people just want to fix the problem as it is right now. Just fix the external stimuli and not actually sit and think about what caused it. Maybe we should just end the causation of it in the first place?
Well, I think this is, let's take this back to the Walter Block, Scott Horton debate. I think that's kind of the essence of the problem that I have with Walter Block's position is that if you boil it all down, what he's saying is we have been trying to vote a better government in for 250 years or whatever it is, and what we need to do is pick the lesser of evil and vote in a better government. Because we're just going to keep repeating the same mistake year after year, election after election, but we're under a moral obligation to just continue doing this over and over.
Right. And we fiends know that there's no such moral obligation. And I, like Scott Horton, think we're probably better served renouncing any candidate until they meet a certain threshold. I think for me, Ron met that threshold. And if Ron was running now, I'd probably write his name in. I don't think, like you, Ben, I also don't think they'd ever let Ron get close enough to be anything more than a write-in candidate.
I did want to take one pot shot at Block, though, that there was a moment that I think was the low point in the debate, and it was an absolutely unnecessary act of desperation by Walter Block, and that's where he said that Scott was a, in his words, quote, a secret Windy McIlroy. And in doing that, not only was he trying to throw an insult at Scott Horton, but he was sort of under his breath insulting Windy McIlroy. And I like Windy McIlroy. I think she has done a lot of good stuff. And, you know, she has some really good, solid stuff. Now, if Walter Block disagrees with Windy McIlroy, maybe he should go debate Windy McIlroy and not bring her name up for no reason whatsoever other than to throw her under the bus in an attempt to insult Scott Horton. So I think I needed to bring that up, even though we try to be positive in this last segment. I needed to bring that up because I think that was particularly despicable of Block to do that, and unnecessary.
I think it fell flat, though, because when I heard that, just like you, I was like, well, so what? What's wrong with Winnie McIlroy? I mean, she's in all sorts of antiwar.com commercials for how awesome she is, or you know, FEE or anything like that, or wherever she works and writes, people tend to like her. I don't see how that's an insult in the first place.
Somebody might throw it at me that, well, yeah, but Wendy was nice to you and went on your show and Walter Block wasn't. Well, yeah, okay, maybe that's... But I don't think that's why I'm biased in that argument.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I don't think it's a bad thing to say, well, I'm not going to participate in the system. I think that that's what we're here to do, is we're here to just say no. Just say no to the government thugs. Just say no to the goons and their politicians. Because all they're going to do is tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah, I think when it comes to voting, just simply ask yourself, when is enough enough?
Good
Ben,
point.
Your turn.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just say no. Enough is enough. Let it burn.
All right. Let it burn. Worm. Keep doing you. Make your own life better. That's your redemption. Worm.